Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. You can always watch the Triple Option with RBKD. Go to hornfm.com and you can tap into the Twitch stream there. You also can cyberstalk each of us if you would like to do that. Via Twitter, I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man, KD is at KevinDunn01 and BK is at Brad Kellner in the Twitterverse. All right, without further ado, let's bring on our guest. He's a family, though. You can hear him every day on Light the Tower with Craig Way, the voice of the Longhorns. He also does the Longhorn Blitz podcast with myself and Matt Butler. He is one of the best writers over at Horns 24/7 and a must-follow. Jeff Howe joining us right now on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. Jeff, what's going on, man?
Guys, I appreciate the invite. Trey, I don't know if you're listening. Sorry if I was rude today, but I was just trying to get the hell out of the station before another show asked me to do something today. So my apologies.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, you're a hardworking man, man, and we appreciate it, no doubt about it. All right, well, let's start, because I want to get your thoughts about a lot of different things here, and we'll get to Texas baseball here, but I want to talk a little Texas football recruiting while we got you. Mike Roach does a great job over there at Horns 24/7 with his Stampede piece, gets it up there, gives you all the breakdown. We won't give away everything, but I want to start with the Arch Manning recruitment. I know that's 2023, and that's a ways away, but it seems to be a huge topic of discussion. Is Texas realistically in that Arch Manning discussion? I've heard you talk about this as well. What are your thoughts based on what you guys are hearing at Horns 24/7 and how the recruiting visit went for Arch Manning? I know that was an unofficial visit, but how did it go for him this past weekend?
It's real, Rod. It's about as real as it could be for a kid of that magnitude. A kid who's that talented, and a kid whose, you know, recruitment is really another cycle away. But, and I'll preface everything I'm going to say by saying this. He's got two massive visits coming up. He's got Alabama and Georgia on the docket, but he's been to Clemson. He's been to Texas. Actually went to SMU, and don't laugh at that. Like, that's a visit that I heard actually went pretty well from SMU side. But this was a recruitment that started when Sark was at Alabama. The family got acquainted with them. They moved to Texas. AJ Milley actually has done a really nice job on this recruitment. I know when Mike Roach was in New Orleans a couple of weeks ago, AJ Milley's name popped up a lot. But, you know, Texas going into the visit, they had done pretty much everything you possibly could do without face-to-face contact that you could do to put yourself in as good of a position as possible. And now coming off of the visit, I'm not going to say Texas is the leader in this one because there's a long way to go. But if you wanted to kind of make a futures bet and go to the casino and put some money down on Texas, some units down on Texas to win the Arch Manning sweepstakes, I wouldn't disagree with you doing that. That's where we are right now. So yeah, you can realistically look at that, you know, recruiting target board for 23 and say, yeah, not only is Arch Manning probably going to end up being, should be, is their number one target at the quarterback position at 23, they've got a realistic chance to go get him.
Interesting. I know he wants to play with great players too, and we look at what Sark was able to do with the receivers at Alabama. Another 2023 guy, that would be wide receiver Jalen Hale, and I've seen him listed as a five-star as well. Where is Texas with the receiving group, and specifically Hale?
I think they're in a pretty good spot, Kevin. I mean, again, about as good of a spot as you could be right now. I think the thing that's going to be interesting with the 23s in particular, with the 22s, it's different because while those kids haven't taken visits in a while, everything is going to be accelerated for those guys, where I feel like everything is going to be thrown at those guys in such a compressed amount of time that they're probably going to want to get stuff out of the way pretty quick. Right, like we saw that with Derrick Brown, the Texas High edge rusher coming off of his visit to Texas, like cancels his A&M visit, and you know it seems like he's starting to really wind things up. Now, every kid's not going to be that way, but I feel like for the majority of kids, it's going to be that way, where you're going to see just a lot of activity between now and the start of the football season. With the 23s, it's a little bit different, and I think the 23s, and this kind of goes back into where I'm not going to tell you to pump the brakes on Arch Manning, but understand that there's a long way to go. That sugar rush, if you will, coming off of the visit, it's going to be real, but that's probably going to be the case as guys go from school to school. Mm-hmm. So there's two guys, Kevin, that really stand out in that class. You've got Jalen Hale from Longview, like you said, who's, you know, Texas is in the mix there. It sounded like maybe Oklahoma and A&M were both in the mix heavily, but I think Texas is in that one now. And then Jonte Cook from DeSoto, who's another really talented receiver in that 23 class. He's gotten to develop a pretty good rapport with Arch Manning, I guess, as much as one as you can form at this point. I think that recruitment is going to be big for Texas. And then, considering going back to the Arch Manning connection, hanging on to Ruben Owens, the running back at El Campo, who right now is the number one ranked running back in the state in that 23 class. I think if you're talking about Arch Manning, and as you guys have seen it over the years, I mean, all these pieces to the recruiting puzzle tend to fit together by the time you get to signing day if you have one of those classes that's really special. To me, those are really, looking at it right now, those are the three guys that are a really big part of it in terms of, can Texas get all three of those guys? It seems like, I'm not saying they're a package deal or anything like that, it just seems like they fit together, that being Arch Manning, Jonte Cook, and Ruben Owens.
That'd be awesome. Jeff Howe of Horns 24/7 and Light the Tower, which you can hear 10 to noon every day on the Horn, joining us now on the Triple Option with RBKD. Jeff, Texas did pick up a commitment over the weekend for the class of 2022. Anthony Jones, a three-star athlete from Nevada, plays both ways, but it seems like the Texas staff is leaning defense for Anthony Jones. What can you tell us about him and what he brings to the table to Texas?
Yeah, what's funny about this one, PK, so he's apparently been kind of committed to Texas for a while now, and credit Pete Kwiatkowski for selling this kid on playing offense over defense twice, because the kid was committed to Washington at one point. And not to say that, maybe it is safe to say, look, coming out of signing day, the one position Sark really talked about, obviously we know you got to get your quarterback. There's certain things you've got to do in every recruiting class. But a major point of emphasis for him coming off of signing day with the 21 class going into the 22 cycle, they had to get quality bodies to play those two hybrid outside linebacker edge positions. We know they loaded up in the transfer portal, and it's not that they don't have talented guys on campus. Like, I think Prince Adorba, from a scheme fit standpoint, I think he fits much better in this defense than he did in the Chris Ash defense. They just don't have enough bodies there as they're making this transition. But Anthony Jones, the kid, 6'5", 242, as you said, BK, two-way player, and has been kind of telling people publicly that he wants to play tight end. But Texas has really sold him on being one of those edge guys, that hybrid outside linebacker, defensive end. That's where they're going to put him. And trust me, they are not done looking for guys at that position. I do think right now, they've got their quarterback with Malik Murphy, and there's some things that they feel good about. But I think that's a position where, I think if you ask this staff, where do you want to really improve your talent and depth as a program by the time this cycle is over, I think it's those two edge positions, because they just don't have enough young bodies that they can develop going as we go down the road here.
Hey, Jeff, I thought it was interesting. I read at Horns 24/7 that one of the sales, I guess the sales pitch, if you will, for Harold Perkins, the five-star linebacker, was this hybridized role of a off-ball linebacker, potential safety rover type hybrid. And I think it's really cool. Like, that's how they should have sold it. I think that's how they did in the end, sell it to DeMarvion Overshown to make that type of transition. Can you tell us more about Harold Perkins and more about that sales pitch? Is that just Pete Kwiatkowski's mentality? That's something he's doing specifically for this young man, or that's something we're going to see across the board in his style of recruiting, if you will?
No, I think you're going to see them do that. I think that's going to kind of be their style, Roger. I even asked Sark about it during the spring. I said, as you guys move forward, do you sell positionless football? Because that's obviously, Rod, we talk about it, the blitz all the time, but I know you talk about it a lot. That's kind of where the game is going, where you're not, and I think what's interesting about that too is, like, we've even changed, 24/7, we've kind of changed the categories with which we rank recruits. Like, the old traditional kind of weak side defensive end, strong side defensive end, that's not the case anymore. We just rank guys as kind of edge defenders. We don't have inside linebackers or outside linebackers, because, kind of off the ball linebacker has become its own position. So I think we're kind of catching up with where the game is going. But yeah, that's kind of what they're doing, is I think some of their linebackers, guys at the second level, I think they look at some of those guys as being kind of interchangeable parts. And Harold Perkins is really one of those guys, Rod. He fits into that kind of positionless mold, if you will. You know, 6'2.5", 200. He's a 24/7 sports composite five-star guy. I do think that that's kind of where they want to go, is just find guy. And you can look at, like, if you look at some of Pete Kwiatkowski's defenses at Washington, some of their linebackers, guys they had playing at the second level, kind of fit that sand mold, 6 foot, 6'1", kind of in that 200 to 205 range, just guys that can go sideline to sideline, cover a lot of ground, that can get out and run. And I think the way this defense is being built, I think you can see the vision, because we saw it at Washington. If you can have, a guy, then they had a great run of those tackles, Danny Shelton, Vita Vea, a guy that can move at 320, 330, and then you can kind of build it out from there with just dudes that can run. If you've got a couple of big guys inside that can cover people up, that's kind of how this defense is going to function. But no, that star position, that's something that they're recruiting Harold Perkins for that, but I think that's what you'll see this staff kind of do going forward. There will be those positions that they specifically target, but I think specifically at the second level, they just want guys with that size, with that profile, that can just get out and run.
Jeff, according to y'all, 24/7 in the 2022 recruiting rankings, Texas sits at number 8 right now in the nation. Who are some guys that could bump that up a little bit that they're close with?
Yeah, I think, to me, Kevin, the interesting thing in this class for me is the offensive line. And you've got some, and they've got, it's not, to me, that position is one that when you look back at the 21 class, right, I think you can see, look, there was clearly a missed opportunity. They missed out on what was a pretty, historic haul in state. And while I don't think this offensive line class, I don't think you've got that type of top-end talent or depth overall in terms of, quantity and quality like you had in the 21 class, this 22 cycle, you can go down the list. Kelvin Banks is a kid at Summer Creek out of Humble that I think they've got a really good chance to go get. They had Cole Hudson from Frisco. He was on campus over the weekend. Devon Campbell at Arlington Bowie is a guy that Texas sits in a really good spot for. So, last year, had they gotten some of those guys at the top, you would have said historic offensive line. I don't know that I would use historic to describe what this offensive line class can be, but it can be a really damn good offensive line class that, if you're Kyle Flood, can put you in a really good spot and build on top of what you got. And that's another thing, too, with that position. And that's the position that we always talk about, because it baffles me, quite frankly, how bad Texas has been developing blue chip talent. I mean, I've gone through the numbers. I mean, I looked at it in the 24/7 sports composite since starting with the 2004 recruiting cycle. Texas assigned 41 blue chip offensive linemen, and at this point, none of those guys have been NFL draft picks. It's dumbfounding how bad this program has been developing offensive linemen. That's something that's got to change if they want to take the step of even competing annually for a Big 12 title, as we know. But, the interesting thing as far as that goes is they didn't go into the portal to get any line help, because I really do think Sark and Kyle Flood think there are some good young pieces that they can mold. A guy like Isaiah Hookson, a guy like Tyler Johnson, guys that were highly recruited guys. Jake Majors falls into that category, but you guys know how it is. When you talk about that position, you've got to keep just stockpiling talented class on top of talented class on top of talented class. So, again, that to me, until that changes, Kevin, that'll be the one area that I focus on more than anything, is every year, are you bringing in 3 to 5 offensive linemen that you feel like 4 or 5 years down the road can be NFL players?
It's well said. Jeff Howe, Horns 24/7 and Light the Tower, which you can hear right here on the Horn weekdays from 10 to noon, joining us on the Triple Option with RBKD. All right, Jeff, we got to shift gears. We got to get a baseball question in here. Your thoughts on what you saw over the weekend at the Dish, and more of an all-encompassing question about this season for Texas baseball, but also the job David Pierce has done. Of course, he led Texas to Omaha in 2018, but 2019 was an absolute disaster of a season, and there were some diehard Texas baseball fans questioning whether or not Coach Pierce was right for the job. Since then, a great start to last year, then COVID happens, but obviously a phenomenal year in 2021, and they're on their way to Omaha. Just your thoughts on Texas baseball and the job David Pierce has done at the helm of this program.
Yeah, I was kind of in that boat too. 19 made you question a lot of things. And, it was kind of almost I remember kind of having the, okay, I guess this is a mulligan kind of moment when, you know, I'm on the field with David Pierce after the Oklahoma game to wrap up that 19 season. He's telling me and a couple other writers, he's like, look, there's going to be some changes around here because I'm not going 27 and 27 ever again. So it's kind of like, all right, let's see what you do. And, you know, it was kind of a calculated risk to move Sean Allen to that pitching coach role, to bring in Troy Tulowitzki, but I think the staff mixture that they've got in Philip Miller, who has been described to me as kind of like the ultimate culture guy, kind of the glue guy on that coaching staff, those pieces really fit well. And, you know, as far as the team goes, I think you're starting to see, and I think even David Pierce will tell you it's not perfect, but I know I've said this a lot, but I keep going back to, you know, the first conversation, one of the first conversations that myself and some of the other writers had with him after he took the job, and we're talking about recruiting and philosophy and a lot of that stuff. And he's talking about, you know, he wants a team that can score runs in multiple ways. And his philosophy on recruiting was, you know, give us toolsy guys, the guys that are just good raw athletes, multi-sport guys in high school, guys that can run, guys that might have pop in the bat, and we will teach them. They felt confident enough in their ability to develop ball players. They're like, we'll turn them into ball players. Just give us guys with good raw tools. And I think we were seeing there was a point in this program where you were seeing Texas, more often than not, it felt like going after finished products, which is fine, but the problem with that is, especially the way the draft structure was for a few years, a lot of those guys don't make it to campus. So you've really got to understand what you're looking at in terms of how to develop ballplayers, and they've done a really good job of recruiting multi-sport athletes and recruiting athletes. And then the guys that they've brought in, JUCO guys and transfers, it's been guys that have made a lot of sense and guys that have fit, Mike Antico being chief among them. I think you've seen that throughout the postseason. Look, they've got guys on this team, like Cam Williams and Ivan Melendez, even though he's struggled lately, that can change the game with one swing. But then they've got speed with guys like Kennedy and Antico. If they can get on base, that is a hellacious running game that puts a lot of pressure on opposing pitchers. I think this team now is at the point where they are elite defensively. And some of the biggest question marks we had going into the year, you know, I know Cam Williams has had some hiccups here and there at third base, but I don't worry about them defensively at second base or third base and have it in a really long time. I think they're elite defensively, and Zubia's been outstanding at first base, especially coming from a guy that the staff has even admitted, look, there was a time we didn't know if he was going to be able to play a position. And then the other question mark that we had was the bullpen. You know, how are your arms going to develop at the back end? And those guys, for the most part, except for a few hiccups here and there, those guys have been lights out, especially, you know, the young kids, Nixon and Witt. So I think when you take it all into consideration, David Pierce's vision, knowing that they had to go to work and had to reinvent some things after 19, I think if you're a Texas baseball fan, I think you love the makeup of this team. You love the resiliency of it. You got to love the mix of guys that are going to be here a few more years. But the veterans, you feel good about the future, but you also feel good about this is a team now that you look at the way the postseason is kind of developed. This is a team that's got as good a chance as anybody left in the bracket to go be, you know, not just in the championship series, but to go get number 7.
No doubt. He is Jeff Howe of Horns 24/7 and Light the Tower, which you can hear right here on the Horn weekdays from 10 to noon. Jeff, great stuff as always, my friend. Thanks so much for the time, and look forward to hearing you on Soccer Matters tonight.
Yeah.
Apparently you're on every single show that we have here.
You're helping me move at 9 tonight, too. You have that on the docket, right?
Yeah, that's not happening. I care to you guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
You know, I can jump on whatever soccer you guys need. Not that I'm going to be much help on that, but
You're the man, Jeff. Appreciate the time, brother.
Anytime, guys.
See you, buddy.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Howe, Horns 24/7. All right, KD, you've got a dude to tell us about.
I do. It is Sam Dude, Barton Creek Lending Group, the name to remember if you're ready to refi your home or maybe even buy a new one. So either of those situations, he can help you out. Rates are still low, but they're creeping back up, and they're going to be creeping back up. So this is actually the time to call. You need to call them or just get online and check out the website. That's the way to do it because the website's easy to remember. It's homeloandude.com. If you're affected by the winter weather, insurance may not cover all your repairs. If that's the case, don't worry about it. Sam can help you tap into the equity of your home and make up the difference. It's Sam Dude at Barton Creek Lending Group. He can refi your home, lower your payment, and put some cash
in your pocket. They don't want to deal with the big box bank, and that's why one of the reasons they like Sam. You're going to like him because he's a family guy, he's just a really good person, and he's really smart. Find him at homeloandude.com. The dude abides. It's homeloandude.com.
The dude abides. I'm throwing it back to you, dude. What's on One and Done today?
You know what? College baseball is one damn good sport. I'm going to get into Texas and what I saw over the weekend, but this is a sleeping giant in its own right. I talk about women's volleyball. You can talk about softball. Baseball nationally should be bigger than it is, and I think we got a taste of that this weekend.
Like that five-star recruit in Kentucky, he's been here and he's gonna stay here. It's One and Done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
One and Done time. Huge shout out to the Texas fan base. We try and be real on this show and objective, and if there's not a good crowd like there have been at the Irwin Center at times, we'll call it out. But I'm hoping, I know Chris Beard was there because he fired the cannon after the Eyes of Texas. And I know he's looking around at that scene and thinking, we just got to get, even if we don't get 100% of the energy, if we can get some people out, especially to Moody when it's a new, but even next year to the Irwin Center, if we've got a good team, it is a huge home court for them and home field advantage for the baseball team. Guys, we talked about this heading into this weekend that we didn't think that South Florida had ever seen anything like this. I think we can back that up now and say they had never seen anything like that. That was an all-time Texas baseball crowd. That took me back to the 80s, the 90s, early 2000s. Any of those crowds that really had a huge impact on Texas getting to Omaha. Look, they've been 37 times because they've had really good players and really good coaches, but they've got a great fan base. I don't remember ever being prouder to be a Texas baseball fan or to have gone to that school as I was last night. That was something special, y'all.
Yeah. No, like I said, I was a little bit, as a football guy, a little envious of that, and the way the fans connected with the team and the program. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, I think that's what all programs at Texas, male and female, should be striving for.
Right.
Ladies and the men should be striving for that kind of impactful fan experience.
Yeah, just that type of energy.
It felt like a family reunion, man. It felt like a festival. Like, it was just...
You said that earlier. That's a good way to put it.
On the outside, I mean, it's just... And Occupy Left Field, give a shout out, because they're a big part of that, and so does CDC. But, yeah, man, it really does. It just has this feel, this energy to it that, like I said, it's amazing. Like I said, I wasn't even there. I was just watching it from the outside, looking in and talking to people who were out there, and it was pretty extraordinary.
No, if you've been there a lot, you can hear it. You can hear when it's at that kind of level. And BK, you said you've been to a lot of games out there. You'd never heard it like that before.
It was an electric factory last night. I mean, it was a special crowd, and they were there early, and they stayed until well after the game was over. It was amazing. It really was. It's a night I'll never forget. I almost drank enough to where I would forget the whole thing. But I did not, thankfully. It was surreal, and like you said, KD, it was a home field advantage. It definitely gave the guys a boost. You heard Coach Pierce talk about it. You heard some of the players talk about it after the game. It's a real thing. Home field advantage is a real thing. Of course, we were all robbed of that last year, and the fans made a big impact this year. It was cool to see.
My only question was Sunday night. People got to work. People have families. Was it going to be packed? It was packed. It was as loud as it was on Saturday night, where you kind of expect that. And the relationship between the team and the hardcore fan base has always been unique to me. And you would see that with the Wild Bunch and Scott Wilson and those guys back in the day. I would see it when I was a young fan or a bat boy or any of the iterations that I've had being involved with the Texas baseball program. That was always there. And that was there last night. BK, those guys, I'm sure, went up to left field after and BS'd a little bit. And for the ones that are 21, maybe even had a well-deserved cold one. But they understand how important left field and that whole fan base. I mean, there were people down the right field line that are talking to the right fielder and talking to the first baseman and second baseman. And you can see it. I mean, I was pretty aware of just how involved that crowd was, because I could see South Florida defenders having a little fun back. And those guys ate it up. I want to give them some love again. That's a pretty good damn baseball team and a very young one. that's going to be a team to be reckoned with, especially in that league. But the next regional they get into, guys, this experience is only going to help them. And the next time they're in a super regional with that type of atmosphere, they're going to handle it better than they did this weekend.
Yeah, you're probably right. Young team, those guys had never played in an atmosphere anything close to that. So it made a huge difference. And yeah, a lot of the players came out to left field after the game and celebrated. And it was really cool. Occupy left field guy. Apparently his name's Mark, but I swear on his birth certificate it says Occupy left field guy. He tweeted out a screenshot of a DM that Ty Madden had sent him after the 2019 season. And 2019, of course, was one of the most disappointing years in Texas baseball history. Ty Madden actually sent a DM to Occupy Left Field basically thanking them for their support and thanking them for being a part of what was a really, really rough year for Texas baseball. And Ty Madden promised the left field crew that things were going to change. And sure enough, they did. But that goes to your point, KD, about how much the players, and Rod, you said it too, how much the players really appreciate it and how much they know how big left field is for them on the field.
Yep. Huge props to the fans, huge props to this team, because they did go 27-27. And there were, understandably so, questions about David Pierce. He's the fifth head coach ever to be here. They nailed the other four. When I mean nailed, they got four Hall of Famers. So there's a lot of pressure on him. And as Jeff kind of talked about, Jeff Howe, they made the necessary moves, changes, and decisions. And there's no doubt the chemistry is much better with this coaching staff. I think they've kind of hit that middle of going to get athletes and turning them into baseball players, but there's got to be some baseball skill to start with. You can't do that in 3 or 4 years, no matter how good you are at coaching the game. And they've kind of found that mix. And right now, David Pierce deserves a lot of love. And he's going to get a lot of love for me because he made those changes. He has grown. He has gotten better as a coach. And we've seen that with this organization. Tulo, I bragged on him all year. I'm not sure we can calculate just how valuable he's been. Sean Allen has done a great job going back and forth between, okay, well, is he the hitting guy? Is he the pitching coach? And then you throw in Philip Miller, but I'm going to throw in Drew Bishop. I'm going to throw in Carly Todd. I'm going to throw in Matt Couch, who I remember at San Diego, really with college baseball especially because of whether it's the 11.7 or you just don't have as many resources with coaches. They won't allow you to have that. You really got to get it right with that crew. And David Pierce has gotten it right. They're going to Omaha, and this is going to be a ball. One other thing I want to mention, I saw a couple national guys who are not big college baseball people tweeting this weekend and saying, this is such an underrated sport. And it's underrated because of how good the product is on the field. Guys, there's never in my lifetime been this many major league guys, and I'm talking about guys that are playing in the majors right now, where I can tell you where they went to college. At some point, the word got out to younger baseball players, and a lot of it has to do with just how crappy the minor league experience is and how little they get paid, and the meals that we saw from the Oakland A's a week or two ago, that, hey, if you can go to Chapel Hill or Austin and cut out a lot of that time and then just be able to get to fly through AA and AAA, and next thing you know, you're in the bigs. That's the way to do it. Yeah. You can start. You can get your start your education and always go back and get your degree. But I just saw some phenomenal baseball this weekend in the atmospheres. This is where it changes for Major League Baseball for me. The atmospheres were incredible, including Arkansas losing to NC State. Obviously, Duty Nobles got 14, 15,000, and that is a straight up party in Stark Vegas.
Funny word.
What? Duty Noble, I know. Yeah, I know. They go with Duty Noble. Stanford, I know that was in Lubbock, but Stanford dealt with that environment, and it's just one fun baseball team to watch. Arizona, you don't think of Tucson as being a real tough place to play? It is. You got the Whistler in Nashville. I mean, I watched as much as I could. Tennessee, Knoxville has a great environment. This is an underrated sport. I hope ESPN continues to give it coverage. I wish they would do that more in the regular season, because I'm not ever telling you it's going to be anywhere near college football, because it won't. But it actually could be a little bit more popular than it is. People just have to see it. And if you saw it this weekend, you know what I'm talking about.
Agreed, 100%. And I'll give ESPN some love. I know people bag on ESPN Plus all the time, but ESPN Plus has opened the door to more college baseball during the regular season.
No question.
Which is great. Like, I was able to watch more college baseball this year than I ever have because of ESPN Plus. So hopefully they make more of the games more accessible to the general public who doesn't pay that $6 a month. But it's growing, man. I mean, this sport's a hell of a lot of fun. It's fun during the regular season, but obviously it amps up in the postseason. And anybody who spent some of their weekend watching any of these games got to experience that.
Is the name, image, and likeness going to help more guys stay?
That's a great question, Rod.
Well, it won't matter in baseball as much.
It won't
because they leave so early, too.
It won't matter as much, but there are going to be some guys. I mean, Ty Madden's probably someone who could be a part of that if that going on right now.
Yeah.
You got a future major leaguer, you got a future first rounder, and a guy who's an All-American here in a city and at a school that clearly really cares about this sport.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, you don't think Ivan Melendez could have had some fun with that nickname?
No doubt.
Right?
Yeah.
And when he's crushing the ball like he was. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do think it'll help out. I'm not sure how much, but I'll be curious to see how it plays out. But I was just really proud of this sport. There have been times when I'm watching USC and Arizona State, and it's 21-14 in a final game. This is baseball, and I just put my head down and thought, they got to fix the sport. And then the ball got too dead, and the bats got too dead. And we're at a point now where it looks like baseball. It looks balanced. It looks competitively balanced with pitching, hitting, and everything to go with it. And when you've got this many guys that are actually going to school that aren't going to the major league draft or signing out of high school, you get what we got this weekend, and it's not over with. We got one more. Duty Noble is going to be popping tonight for Notre Dame and Mississippi State. So 6 o'clock on, I'm not really on.
Yeah, you haven't been on since 3 o'clock.
That's today. Fair enough.
Yeah, I got your bag. Good stuff, one and done. And the fun's just beginning, too. As great as super regional play is, Omaha is a different beast, and you've just got fans from every school and, hell, fans who just like college baseball who are up there in Omaha, and they're going to be ready to go after not having a College World Series last year. So never a bad time to be a college baseball fan, but it's a pretty fun time to be a college baseball fan, and hopefully KD's right. The sport continues to grow because it's a great product right now. Good stuff. One and done here on the Triple Option with RBKD. Alongside Kevin Dunn and Rod Babers, I am BK Brad Kellner. When we return, a man says he was eaten by a whale but survived. No, we're not taking you to Sunday school. We've got the real story up next.
D.D. Mangudu.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a break my head comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East. Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time for another edition of Off the Record. And this one is a truly bizarre story. Right out of the Bible, actually. Jonah and the whale. All right, this one's about a commercial lobster diver. Says he was swallowed whole by whale off of the Massachusetts coast on Friday. And only had a few minor injuries as a result of the life and death encounter. Michael Packard. I don't know how he spells it, but I'm sure it's Packard. 56.
Middle name is Fudge, I've been told.
Huh?
What?
Who's the Packer? Who's the real sleazeball that Michael Scott looked up
Todd
to?
Todd Packer. Yeah, Todd Packer.
Who dropped the deuce, left the deuce in his office, like the dog in here.
And he also poisoned everybody on the office with cupcakes that he spiked with drugs.
Oh, did he really? Was that later on?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Sorry if I spoiled it for you. That's a good episode, too. Anyway, but Michael Packard, 56, of Wellfleet, was released hours later from a Cape Cod hospital following his scary encounter with a humpback whale. He told this to WBZ-TV. He was 45 feet deep in the waters off of Provincetown when the attack occurred. He initially thought the whale was a shark, but realized he was wrong when he didn't feel any teeth or pain. Mm. He said, all of a sudden, I felt this huge shove, and the next thing I knew, completely black. He said, I could sense I was moving and I could feel the whale squeezing with the muscles in his mouth. Apparently, BK has got some sound from, I'm assuming this is from WBZ TV, of him talking about this incident.
Yeah.
Being swallowed by a humpback whale.
Here it is.
And then I realized, oh my God, I'm in a whale's mouth. I'm in a whale's mouth. And he's trying to swallow me. And I thought to myself, okay, this is it. This is, I finally, I'm going to die.
Is he in shock still?
Sounds like
he must
it.
Be, he sounds like he's in shock still. I mean, that does, I mean, he was in the whale's mouth for a good 30 seconds. For those who don't know, humpback whales are probably, I don't know, 40 to 60 feet, something like that.
They're huge.
Yeah, 40 to 50 tons. So they're huge. Yeah, the whale could easily have swallowed him, I'm sure. But it's not, there are all the doctors, I guess marine biologists out there, they say obviously the whale, the humpback whale made a mistake. Like it didn't mean to swallow the guy. It must have been confused or something. Like they don't usually try to swallow human beings whole.
He didn't swallow him though, right?
He didn't swallow, but he had him in his mouth for 30 seconds.
Like mouthwash, a little swish action, and then spit him out.
He didn't actually swallow him. He just had him in his mouth for 30 seconds. Mm. And in an effort to save himself, Packard said he began shaking the whale's head before the animal surfaced, and then it just ejected him. In a Facebook post, he said, the whale spit me out, and that he escaped with bruises and no broken bones.
Whoa.
He had a partner with him. His friend, Josiah Mayo, plucked him out of the water and headed back to the shore. Experts told the newspaper that humpback whales are not aggressive animals, especially toward humans. Based on what was described, a marine biologist said that it must have been a mistake or an accident on part of the humpback whale.
So they grow to lengths of more than 50 feet, and the average weight is 40 tons.
Mm. Yeah, so he could have, but no, they don't want to do that.
No.
That thing was, that human
Which
was
is also why he spit him out.
The human was disgusting to him. Yeah, he's like, what is this? This is gross.
Yeah, it was a mistake by the whale.
Yeah.
Guy looked like krill, I guess, so he ate him.
Well, most shark attacks, they don't like the taste of human. But it depends it depends how hungry they are.
Yeah, they like me. I taste good.
Oh, I'm sure you, ugh. but it's that first bite, so it's like, well, you already did your damage, man. Like, I'm already going to lose a leg, I may bleed to death, so. Yeah.
Mm.
Do we believe this guy? Like, this seems a little fishy to me.
Well done.
Well done.
Nice. Well done.
Yeah.
It's a mammal.
That's low-hanging fruit there. But seriously, do we think this guy is telling the truth, or is this 15 minutes of fame type of thing? Like, this story is too unbelievable for me to believe it without video or picture. It just is. And this is something that I think you could pretty easily make up. If it's just you and a buddy who are out, nobody else is around you.
You can make it up.
Hey, how can we get famous real quick? What can we do here?
It can be made up.
Hey, a whale ate me and spit me out. Because whales don't swallow humans, so people are going to believe that. And let's run with it.
Yeah. And even in Jonah and the whale, I believe the circumstances are manipulated by God.
Yeah.
Like Jonah upsets God because Jonah basically decides he doesn't want to lead the Christian life or whatever. Or at least the life that God wants him to lead. And then he's punished when he goes out to sea. Basically, a storm comes and then he's swallowed up by the whale when he's thrown overboard by the crew.
Yeah.
Because the crew is mad at him because God is basically laying down the hammer.
They were throwing one guy over at a time, trying to figure out whose fault it was.
Yeah.
And then they threw Jonah, and down he goes. But he was swallowed by the whale, right? He spent a couple of days inside?
About 3 days, I think, something like that. Yeah. He survived.
He looked at me, I'm like, I have no idea.
But that is the only, he's right, that's the only story of a human being swallowed by a whale is literally the one we have from the Bible. That's it. We've never heard anything. No, there are no tales of that ever. Maybe you could talk about, you know, Moby.
So you're not buying either of those.
You can talk about Moby Dick. No, Moby Dick was a whale, but he wasn't trying to.
He wasn't a great guy, but I wouldn't call him that.
Yeah.
Moby Dick?
Yeah.
No, Moby Dick. the whale.
Moby Richard?
The whale in Moby Dick, the white whale.
Oh, is that a book or something?
He's aggressive, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But he's aggressive, but I don't think he eats any of the crew.
I think he does either.
He just tries to, drown the crew and stuff like that, right? They're hunting the whale, too.
All right, the more we talk about this, the more I'm with BK. I don't buy it.
I mean, I'm adding to BK's point that there are no tales of whales eating humans or swallowing humans or putting them in their mouth or anything.
Yeah, and the guy just kind of sounded like he was on meth during the little interview that he gave, too. He just didn't seem like he was all the way there.
He was startled with that truck backing up.
Yeah. So actually, I think he just like saw the whale in the distance and told himself that he was eaten by it.
I think BK might make a good point here, man. I need more proof.
Yeah.
Now.
I mean, without a picture, without a video, like there's no way we can confirm this.
Pics or it didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, well done by this guy because people are falling for it and it's become a national story. So if it was a bit just to gain 15 minutes of fame, it's absolutely working.
But I want to hear the friend. I want to see how these stories match up.
Oh, right. Get them in separate rooms and see if they tell the same tale. Yeah.
Yeah, I think BK, you're the first one. I guess everybody likes the story so much.
We want to believe it.
You want to believe it, but yeah, it doesn't seem very likely.
Yeah, I wish the whale actually did eat him. That'd be a better story to me.
He wouldn't eat him because he don't taste. He's not the type of dish that the whale wants. You know, whales don't eat humans.
Yeah,
eat
that's
fish.
True. That's true.
Marine life.
Mm.
That guy probably disgusting. I mean, what's the equivalent of what that whale just ate eating a human? That'd be like us eating a what? And it being gross and spitting it out.
A whale.
Yeah.
That don't taste good.
Have you had whale before?
I'm trying to think. I've had shark. I haven't had whale.
You have had shark?
I've had shark.
How does shark taste?
First off, it's got to be prepped in a different way than I had it. And this was like in the late 80s. And the cook just didn't really know. It was a family member.
How they cook
who's
the
a good
shark?
Cook.
Is it like sushi? How they cook the shark?
No, I think it's how you treat it. So because they can get really tough, and this was tough.
Wow, there you go,
man.
See, none of us. I would have known it about KD. He's had shark.
I've had
meat
shark
before.
Meat before.
I don't think I'm touching that.
Nope.
I don't
have
any part of
alligator,
that.
But no shark meat.
I should have had horse meat. I had a chance in Emilia Romagna region, but I didn't.
Is horse meat a thing?
Horse meat's a thing in certain cultures, certain parts of Italy. It's still eaten.
Like is it a delicacy or something? Or?
Kind of, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does it taste? Oh,
I didn't try it.
Well, they say it tastes like chicken.
Of course, yes.
No, I'm just
saying. That's the go-to.
Well, they say it tastes like.
It takes on the flavor.
Forgot
what they
deer
did
or something.
Yeah, more like a venison, a little bit more of a
like
different
venison.
Taste.
Yeah. Next is up for humans for you. You'll be like Trey. He wants to taste human flesh. Want to taste human flesh?
Yeah, Trey.
Doesn't
and I
always talk about
Trey
that?
And I want to get Chad when Chad dies. We want to turn his calves into an ossobuco, which would be perfect. So we were trying to get that done. Where Chad's so selfish about this.
Selfish,
very selfish. He's dead. What does he care about?
Should donate his body to be
his calves. That's all we want.
Like eat them like turkey legs. They're so thick.
Exactly.
Just pick that thing up. There's a lot of meat on that.
I hope you guys die before I do.
We're gonna be brining.
That's
them,
a discussion
though.
You guys had on the show before I heard it.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
Trey talked about human flesh.
I didn't
like
want
minutes.
Any part of that, dude. I'm not eating any human. I'm out. That's for Trey and KD, apparently. Mm. What a story. We're off the record. See? A guy from Boston swears that he was eaten by a whale.
Not even whales want to eat humans.
No.
Nobody wants to eat human. Human meat is disgusting.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, I don't want it. I don't want any part of that. All right, it's the Triple Option with RBKD. There's Off the Record. When we return to sports. What a weekend it was at the Dish for the 37th time in school history. Texas is going to the College World Series. We'll recap the two wins over South Florida and start to look ahead to what this team can do in Omaha next.